ओके नमोम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिनी नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौरव भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे कृष्ण। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। So we will start with a quick recap of what we have seen till now, and then we will take it forward. So we have been discussing from the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, starts with the question asked by Dhritarashtra, who is very much distressed or very much anxious to know what is going to be the fate of his sons, because he is afraid that the nature of the place, that Kurukshetra, the dharmic nature of the place, will have an effect on the outcome of the battle. Either it may influence the Pandavas to win the battle, or it may influence the Kauravas to become more dharmic and actually surrender everything to Pandavas, like that. So Sanjaya responds by telling, Drishtva tu Pandavanikam Vyudam Duryodhanastada Acharyam Upasangamya Raja Vachanam Abravit. He informs Dhritarashtra that Duryodhana approaches Dronacharya with the mood of actually inspiring him to fight the battle. So definitely he is indicating indirectly Duryodhana is not going to give up the battlefield or leave the battle and concede the victory to the opponent Pandavas, and then he starts describing the opponent's army. Pashyetan Panduputranam Vyudam Acharya Mahatim Chamum Vyudam Drupada Putrena Tavasishena Dhimata. He says, look what you have done. You have trained this Drishtadyumna, who is destined to kill you, and you have taught him everything. And now he is very intelligent, and he has become the commander in chief of the Pandava army, and he is going to kill us. And what you have done? Your mistake has cost me very dearly. Right? Then he describes the opponents. Atrashura Mahishvasa Bhimarjuna Samayudhi Yuyudano Viratascha Drupadascha Maharata. There are so many Maharatas who are equal in fighting to Bhima Arjuna like that. Then he lists the various names, and then he says that he is afraid that maybe Dronacharya might get disheartened, thinking that, if this is the case, if their army is so powerful, then maybe, we will lose the battlefield. So he says that, Asmakam tu Vishishtaye tan nibodha dvijottama Nayaka mama sainyasya samgyartam tan pravimite. He says, actually, even we have very powerful Maharathis. I'm going to tell you who they are. Then he uses his political diplomacy to indicates Bhavan, Drona. Even though Drona is not as powerful as Bhishma, he uses the name of Drona before Bhishma, because Bhishma would not mind, according to the Varnashrama consideration, if a Brahmana's name is mentioned first. Bhavan, Bhishmascha, Karanascha. After Bhishma, he tells the name of Karana, because Karana and Bhishma had they didn't share a good equation. So, he tells his name. Then he tells the name of Kripacharya, because Kripacharya was Drona's brother-in-law to invoke that compassion, and he uses the name of Ashwatthama, the son of Drona. Then Vikarna, he uses the name of Vikarna to inspire him, because he was the one who was constantly opposing Duryodhana's activities. So he was thinking that if this Vikarna, my own brother, defects my army and go to the Pandavas' army, then following Vikarna, many people might also defect. So he was afraid. So very diplomatically, he uses the name of Vikarna, even though Vikarna is not known to be a very great hero. Then he says, Anyecha Bhavaha Shura Madarte Tyakta Jivita. He wants to say that there are many other people who have assembled here who are willing to give their lives to me, but he unfortunately ends up telling who have already given up their life to me, which is actually, you know, the work of Mother Saraswati. And as Krishna himself says, Mayaivaite Nihita Purvameva Nimitta Matram Bhavasarva Sachin, that my dear Arjuna, I have already killed them. Now you just act as an instrument and you take all the glories for killing them. Then he says, Aparyaptam Tadasmakam Balam Bhishma Birakshitam Paryaptam Tidametesham Balam Bhima Birakshitam. So he says that our army protected by Bhishma is inadequate, or it can also mean immeasurable. So in he's speaking in double language to inspire both Drona and Bhishma. But then he realizes that others may get demotivated if I am just glorifying Bhishma and Drona. So he says, Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yatabhagam avastita Bhishma meva birakshantu bhavanta sarve vahi. Actually, you all have a very important job of protecting Bhishma. Because if Bhishma is protected, then it is possible for us to win this battle. Right? So, then he says, as soon as Bhishma hears this, he starts playing his conch shell just to inspire Duryodhana. And then both the parties, they started playing the conch shell, and then they started playing bugles and drums, which indicates that both sides were expressing their eagerness to fight. And at that time, Arjuna and Krishna blew their very divine conch shells, transcendental conch shells. Then the other Pandavas, they started blowing their conch shells. And on both the other sides, they all. And then it is mentioned that Sagosho Dhartarashtranam Hridayani Vyadarayat. It actually started splitting the hearts of the Kauravas, because Shankha, already the conch shells which were blown by the Pandavas and Krishna were transcendental conch shells. Right? So therefore, this was not the case of the conch shells which were blown by the Kauravas. And because also conch shell is the personal paraphernalia of Supreme Lord Vishnu, that also indicates that, for atheistic people like Duryodhana, that sound is very, in one sense, disappointing. And it is foreboding something very ominous, actually. So at that point of time, Arjuna says, Rishikesham tadavakyam idamaha mahipate senayor ubayor madhya ratam sthapayami achyuta. So Arjuna told Krishna that, oh Achyuta, please take this chariot in between the two armies. Yavadeta niriksheham yoddukama navastitan. I would like to see who are those people who have assembled here with a desire to fight. Kairmaya sahayoddavyam asmin ranasamudyame. Who are those people against whom and with whom I am supposed to fight? I want to see. Yotsyamana anavekshaham yayate atra samagataha. Dhartarashtrasya durbuddher yuddhe priya chikirshava. And I want to see who are those people who are willing to side with this evil-minded Duryodhana and willing to fight with us. I want to see. So he says, Eva mukto Rishikesho Gudakeshena Bharata Senayor Bayor Madhye Sthapayitva Ratottamam. After hearing this, Krishna took the chariot right in between the two armies. Bhishma Drona Pramukataha. He takes the chariot right in front of Bhishma and Drona and tells to Arjuna, O Partha, Pashyetan Samavetan Kuruniti. Just see who are those people who have assembled to fight with you. Just to invoke that hesitancy and to put Arjuna in a spot of dilemma, dharma sankat. So he took them right in front of Bhishma and Drona. Right. Then Tatra Pashyat Chitan Partha Pitranata Pitamahan Acharyan Matulan Bhratren Putran Pautran Sakimstata Shwasuran Surdaschaiva Senayor Ubayorpi. There Arjuna saw all the all his relatives, grandfathers, fathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, all of them standing in front of him. Then Sanjaya says, Eva mukto Rishikesho Gudakeshena Bharata Senayor Bayor Madhye Sthapayitva Ratottamam. Tan samikshasa Kaunteya Sarvan Bandhu Navastitan Kripaya Paraya Vishto Vishidan Idam Abravit. So completely overcome with compassion and in a very depressed mood, actually Arjuna spoke. So Arjuna is expressing his doubts. First he speaks on the platform of compassion, expressing his compassion. He says, Drishtveman Swajanan Krishna Yujutsum Samupastitam Sidanti Mamagatrani Mukamcha Parishushyati Vepatuscha Sharireme Roma Harshascha Jayate Gandivam Shramsate Hastat Tvakchaiva Paridahyate. So he says, my dear Krishna, seeing all these relatives and friends of mine who have gathered to fight here, Sidanti Mamagatrani, my limbs are trembling. Mukamcha Parishushyati, my mouth has become dry. Vepatuscha sharire me, my body is trembling and my hairs are standing on end. In fact, my most cherished weapon, Gandiva, is actually slipping out of my hands. Right? That which I never give up, that Gandiva is slipping out of my hands. Nacha shaknom yavastatum brahmati vachame manaha nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava. Actually, my mind is totally reeling. And I don't see any favorable outcome coming out of this battle. I don't think I'm going to gain anything favorable out of this battle. So in this way, he says, then this is where we ended our discussion last week. Okay, if there are any quick comments, questions, discussion points based on what we discussed till now, and recap today. So maybe you could ask or share something based on what we have discussed. This is just setting the scene, not much philosophy has started yet. So we'll continue. Nacha shreyonu pashyami hatva swajanama have nakankshe vijayam krishna nacha rajyam sukani cha. He says, nacha shreyo anupashyami. I do not see anything good, any good result. Hatva swajana mahave. By killing my own people in this war, I don't see anything good coming out of it. Na kankshe vijayam. My dear Krishna, I don't desire any victory. Nacha rajyam. I don't desire the kingdom. Sukanicha, I don't desire any happiness also, O Krishna. How can I be happy, killing my own relatives? Right? So he says, I do not see any benefit in killing in this manner. Na shreyo pashyami. The scripture state beneficial results for the person killed. So he says, dvavimau purushau loke suryamandala bhedinau. Parivrad yoga yuktascha ranecha abhimuke hataha. So this is from the Parashara Smriti. So Parashara Smriti says, the sannyasi engaged in yoga and the warrior who dies facing the enemy attain the sun planet. Surya Mandala Bedino. Who? Parivrad Yoga Yuktascha Ranecha Abhimuke Hataha. One who is killed on the battlefield and the person who is a sannyasi who is engaged in yoga, both of them, they attain the sun planet, it is mentioned. Right? However, there is no piety for the person engaged in the killing. So this is Arjuna's argument. Okay? One who dies, of course, this is a very lopsided argument. This is not complete. It's not that a person who is engaged in killing on the battlefield, there is no good result for him. Both are equally pious. It's not that it's glorious to die on the battlefield, but it's not so glorious to kill someone on the battlefield in a dharmic war. It is not like that. But Arjuna is, when someone is very much in distress, then he speaks, you know, his, when people are in extreme sense of in undergoing extreme emotions, then logic does not work for them. You cannot actually evaluate their speech in terms of logic. Logic does not seem to make sense, you know. And Arjuna's case is the same thing. He says, look, the Shastras glorify a person who die on the battlefield. Apparently, the Shastras don't seem to glorify a person who kill another person on the battlefield. So, this is a very flawed logic. This is not true. Even though this, the Shastras really glorify a person who dies on the battlefield, it's equally glorious to fight and win the battle. Right? So, therefore, Arjuna is saying, thus it is better that I die rather than kill because it is good. Of course, if he is going to die without having to fight, again a flawed logic, right? So he says, better I die. Better you die means what? Which means you are not going to fight properly. So such a warrior is actually not glorious. A warrior who puts his weapons down and then just surrenders to his enemy and gives up his life on the battle is not a glorious warrior. And such a person is not going to reach the sun planet. Right? So therefore, Arjuna is giving a very flawed logic here. This is not a proper logic at all. Right? So he says, Krishna may say that by fighting, you will gain tangible results in the form of kingdom and fame. You will become famous and you will attain the kingdom. Arjuna says, I do not desire victory, kingdom or happiness. So let me die. That's what he's indicating. Okay. So again, you see the flawed logic here that Arjuna is telling that it is better because a person who dies on the battlefield is glorified like that. So, I mean, I will keep on moving. So if you have any questions or comments, you please raise your hands. I'll be able to see you and then we can have a discussion. So if you don't, so I'm not going to pause for questions. I may pause also if I feel that, you know, I have spoken for long enough, I may pause also. But even if I don't pause, you know, anytime you have some question or comments, you can please raise your hands and share. Please don't wait for me to pause for questions or discussions. Okay. Then Arjuna continues. Kimno Rajena Govinda Kimbo Gair Jivitenava Yeshamarte Kangshitano Rajam Boga Sukanicha Taime Vastita Yudde Pranam Stekva Dananicha Acharya Pitara Putra Sataivacha Pitamaha Matula Shvashara Pautra Shala Sambandinastata Etanna hantumichami gnatopi madusudana apitrailokya rajyasya heto hukimnu mahikrite निहत्यदर्थराष्ट्रान्नः काप्रीति स्याज्जनार्दन. सो ही सेस दट किम्नो राज्येन, माय डियर कृष्ण, व्हाट इज द यूज ऑफ दिस किंगडम, किम भोगैर, व्हाट इज द यूज ऑफ दिस एंजॉयमेंट, जीवितेन वा आर इवन लिविंग ऑन दिस मेटीरियल वर्ल्ड, व्हाट इज द यूज ऑफ इवन लिविंग. येषाम् अर्थे नः कांक्षितम्, दोस् फॉर हूम वी डिजायर राज्यम, द किंगडम, भोगाः, एंजॉयमेंट, सुखानि, हैप्पीनेस, दोस् पीपल फॉर हूम वी आर फाइटिंग द बैटल फील्ड एंड विथ हूम वी विश टू एंजॉय ऑल दीज थिंग्स, लाइक हूम, आचार्य, पितरः, द फादर फिगर्स, पुत्रः, दोस हू आर लाइक अवर सन्स, सन्स एंड यू नो अदर नेफ्यूज लाइक दैट, पितामहः, द ग्रैंडफादर्स, मातुल, श्वसुर, पौत्र, शाला, संबंधिनस्तथा, मेटर्नल अंकल्स, फादर इन लॉज, ग्रैंडसन्स, ब्रदर इन लॉ, रिलेटिव्स, दीज आर द पीपल इन हूज कंपनी यू नो यू हैव टू एंजॉय दिस किंगडम एंड एवेंचुअली एक्चुअली ते इमे अवस्थिता युद्धे, दे आर नाउ स्टैंडिंग ऑन द बैटल फील्ड ready to fight, pranam tyaktva dhanani cha, risking not only the wealth but their lives also, right? So they are standing here risking their lives and wealth. So he says etan na hantum icchami, actually my dear krishna I don't wish to kill them, gnatopi, even though they may kill me, I don't wish to kill them. Oh, Madhusudana. Trailokya Rajyasya Heto Api. Even though right now we are fighting for the throne of Hastinapur, but even if this battle were to take place, where if the sovereignty over the three worlds is at stake, even in that case, I don't wish to fight. Because what will I do? I may get sovereignty over the three worlds, but if there is no one with whom I can enjoy, all my near and dear ones I have myself killed with my own hands, who am I going to enjoy this sovereignty with? Kim nu mahi krite, what to speak of this insignificant earth? Even if the sovereignty over the three worlds is at stake, I don't wish to fight this battle. O Janardana, naha ka priti syad, what happiness will we achieve dhartarashtran nihatya? So basically he is telling, will I get any happiness? So Arjuna, in one sense we have to understand that Arjuna is a pure devotee, like we discussed last week. None of the verses of Bhagavad Gita are meant for Arjuna. Any instruction, any verse which is in the form of an instruction, any normative verse, this is what you should do, Arjuna. You know, none of those kind of verses are meant for Arjuna, because Arjuna is already a pure devotee. Okay, so, not just a pure devotee, he is a perfect pure devotee. He's a Nitya Siddha. He's a Nitya Parshada of Krishna. Eternal associate. So an eternal associate or a perfected pure devotee at the stage of Prema, they don't act according to instructions. They act according to their own love. They are driven by love. They are not driven by they are not driven by any instructions. You cannot give them instructions. So therefore, in reality, Arjuna does not belong to any of these categories. He is neither a karma yogi, nor a jnana yogi, nor a ashtanga yogi, nor a practicing bhakti yogi. He is not even a bhakti yogi sadhaka, bhakti yoga sadhaka. He is actually a perfected person. Siddhas don't need any instruction. They act out of spontaneous love, right? But here Krishna is putting Arjuna into this particular situation where he is playing, he will successively be playing the role of, initially he will start playing the role of a Sakama Karma Yogi. So right now he is arguing like a Sakama Karma Yogi. A Sakama Karma Yogi wants wealth, happiness, material happiness like that. For that he, so I mean I hope you know, I will just, because I may use some terminologies, because the first time I use these terminologies, let me define them so that it is quite clear. Of course, most of you may already know these terminologies and what they mean, but just in case someone may not know. So, the first category of person is a Sakama Karma Yogi. So, a Sakama Karma Yogi, so his practice, what is his practice? Okay. And what is his goal? This is what we will try to see. Okay. A Sakama Karma Yogi, what is his practice? Varnashrama duties. Okay. I am telling very simply, but along with Varnashrama duties, he also performs Kamya Karma. Kamya Karma means particular activities for the purpose of getting some material benefits like Putra Kameshti and all those things. So Putra Kameshti Yagya or so many other things, for getting some material benefit. So his goal is some material enjoyment. Up to Swarga. Beyond Swarga, he cannot even think about. Okay. Swarga is the topmost according to him. Okay. Then comes the second category of person is Nishkama Karma Yogi. So when a materialistic person with lot of desires for enjoyment agrees to achieve his enjoyment by accepting the Vedic rules, then he becomes a Sakama Karma Yogi. But because of following the Vedic injunctions, gradually some amount of purification happens. And this person is able to understand that this material enjoyment is not all in all. I need to aspire for liberation. And in order to achieve liberation, I have to purify my heart. So therefore, a Nishkama Karma Yogi performs Varnashrama duties, okay, but without any desire for material, he has no desire for material enjoyment. So he performs Varnashrama duties for purifying his heart. This is Nishkama Karma Yogi. So purifying his heart of all kinds of material impressions and material desires. But when he performs Varnashram duties, he does not perform Kamya Karmas. So he does not perform those kinds of activities which are meant for achieving some material goals. Either destruction of material sufferings or achievement of some material happiness. So, when a Nishkama Karma Yogi, when he performs Varnashram duties, sorry, when a Sakama Karma Yogi achieves Varnashram duties, he attains piety. When a Nishka, I think, let me do a better job. I will just add a new slide only because it is very important to understand this. Because these terminologies we will be using in our later. So I will just add one more slide here. Okay, this is better. So let us. Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. So this is process. Then what did we see? What is this practice? Then what is his goal? Okay. What does he gain by practicing Varnashram duties? What does he lose by neglecting Varnashram duties? This is very important. Okay, this is what we are going to discuss now. Okay, so now let me ask you. You are going to fill this table. Okay, I will fill part of the table. You fill the rest of the table. Okay, so we are now going to talk about a Sakama Karma Yogi. Okay, then we are going to talk about a Nishkama Karma Yogi. Then we are going to talk about a Jnana Yogi. Then we are going to talk about an Ashtanga Yogi. Okay. Then we are going to talk about a Bhakti Yogi. Now I want you to fill up the rest of the this thing. So what is the practice of a Sakama Karma Yogi? I will actually allow you to unmute yourselves. Actually, you can unmute yourselves. You can unmute yourself and speak. What is the practice of a Sakama Karma Yogi? What do you think?
Varnashram?
Yeah. He practices Varnashram duties. Okay. But along with Varnashram duties, he also performs Kamya Karma. So Kamya Karma means, you know, it has, as we discussed, activities, karma which is performed for attaining particular material benefits. Right? Like Putra Kameshti and all those things. Okay? And the regular Varnashram duties are divided into, you can say like, Nitya Karma, Nitya Karmas and Naimittika Karmas. So Nitya Karma means that which is performed every day, like Trikala Sandhya Vandanam. You know, three times, you know, you do the Sandhya rites. This is Nitya Karma. Naimittika Karma are periodic duties. So periodic duties like Shraddha, you know, like once in a while you do. So Nitya Naimittika Karmas, Nitya Karmas they do, Naimittika Karmas they do, Kamya Karmas they do, depending on particular desires that they may have. Right? So this is Sakama Karma Yogis. And what is the goal? What is the goal for such people to performing, for performing Varnashram duties?
Material enjoyment.
Yeah, material enjoyment. That's what they will get. Okay. What will they gain by performing Varnashram duties?
Piety.
Yes, they will get piety. And what will they lose by neglecting Varnashram, or what will they get by neglecting their Varnashram duties?
Sinful reactions.
Yes, sinful reactions. Okay. So now let's move on to Nishkama Karma Yogis. So what is the practice of Nishkama Karma Yogis?
Varnashram duties again.
Yeah, Varnashram duties. They perform the Nitya Karmas. They perform the Naimittika Karmas. But kamya karmas, they don't do. Okay, so they don't perform kamya karmas because this is nishkama karma yoga. Nishkama means it's not that they don't have any desires. They don't have any material desires, but they have desire for purifying their heart and achieving liberation. So what is their goal? What is the goal of Nishkama Karma Yogis?
Liberation.
Yeah. Ultimate goal is liberation. What is their intermediate goal? What is their intermediate goal?
Enjoyment?
No. Purification of heart. They don't have any desire for enjoyment. Okay. So they want to purify their heart of all the materialistic vasanas and desires that they have. And the means of achieving that is to perform the varnashram duties without having any material goal in mind. So the Nishkama Karma Yogis, what do they gain by performing their varnashram duties?
Purification of.
Yes. They attain purification of heart, not piety. Okay, because they don't want piety. Because if they want piety, piety is also considered as even pious. Piety also will bind one to the material world. They have already concluded that the goal of their life is to attain liberation. So if liberation is their goal, then there is no point earning piety because piety will bind one to this material world. So they want purification of heart. So they gain, by performing varnashram duties, they gain purification of heart. But what will happen if they neglect their varnashram duties? Something will happen or not? Anyone?
Nothing will happen?
No. They will get sinful reactions. They cannot neglect their varnashram duties because this is mandatory for them. Okay, this is what Krishna says. Karmanyevadikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karmaphala heturbhur ma te sangostu akarmani. He says, O Arjuna, this is an injunction for a Nishkama Karma Yogi. Oh Arjuna, karmanyeva adhikaraste, your adhikar or your qualification is to perform karma. Karma means varnashrama dharma. Your varnashrama karma, you have qualification. Ma phaleshu kadachana. But you don't have qualification to, but you should not be enjoying the fruits or the material fruits of that varnashrama activity. That is not your adhikar. You have a higher adhikar. Don't act according to a lower adhikar, that's what he says. Right? So, karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala heturbhur. Don't try to enjoy the fruits that, don't try to become the cause of the fruit. You don't think you are the doer. You are the exclusive doer also. Ma te sangostu akarmani. And don't be attached to not performing your varnashram duty also. You should perform your varnashram duty, but at the same time, don't try to enjoy this tuchafal of material enjoyment. Antavattu phalam means this temporary fruits of this world. Okay. Now, let's go to Jnana Yoga. So a Jnana Yogi, what is his practice? What does he practice?
Impersonalism.
He does not practice impersonalism.
Renunciation.
What, Mataji?
Sorry. He renounces all sense objects and collects knowledge also.
Yeah. Actually, a Nishkama Karma Yogi, when he purifies his heart, when he performs his Varnashram duties, and when his heart becomes sufficiently purified, then when the heart has no material desires, then he need not perform any Varnashram duty actually. When the heart is completely purified, then he can just meditate on Brahman. So he performs the limbs of Jnana Yoga. This is technically called as sannyas. We will discuss why. Okay, this is called as karma sannyas. He practices the limbs of Jnana Yoga, and he does not practice any Varnashram limbs. Because Krishna says, Yastu Atmaratireva Syad Atma Triptascha Manava Atmanyeva Hi Santushto Tasya Karyam Na Vidyate. For a person, he is an Atmarati. He has interest only in meditating on the Atma. Right? He wants to realize the Atma, and he wants to ultimately attain liberation. So, and he has no material desires and no material vasanas to get purified. So therefore, there is no purpose of his performing Varnashram duties. So there is no Varnashram duties, Nitya Karma, Naimittika Karma or Kamya Karma that he performs. He performs only the limbs of Jnana Yoga. What is his goal?
Liberation.
Yeah, his goal is liberation. So what does he gain by performing Varnashram duties?
Purification of heart.
Nothing. He does not gain anything.
He does not perform.
By performing. Yeah, he doesn't gain anything by performing Varnashram duty because he has no need for it. And what does he lose by neglecting to perform Varnashram duties?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. Now, Ashtanga Yogi. Okay, what is his practice?
Yoga and sadhana.
What sadhana?
Meditation. Ashtanga Yoga.
Yeah, correct. So basically he practices the limbs of Ashtanga Yoga. Okay. Does he practice Varnashram?
No.
Actually, in the initial stages, he practices Varnashram. Okay. When he becomes qualified to practice the later stages, he gives up Varnashram. Arurukshor muner yogam karmakarana muchyate yoga rudasya tasyeva shamakarana muchyate. This is the sixth chapter, I think third verse. He says in the initial stage, when the heart is not yet purified, he practices Varnashram, but eventually he gives it up. What is the goal of the Ashtanga Yogi?
Liberation.
Yeah, his goal is also liberation. So both of them, their goal is impersonal liberation only. Okay. What does he gain by performing Varnashram duty?
Purification until he is purified.
Purification until he is purified. Purification initially. Later?
Nothing.
No, actually it becomes an obstacle. Because he can't be thinking about, while he is meditating on the Paramatma within, he can't be thinking about performing his Varnashram duties. It will become an obstacle actually. And what does he lose by neglecting his Varnashram duties? Anyone? What does the Ashtanga Yogi lose by neglecting to perform his Varnashram duties?
Until he is purified, probably sinful reactions.
Yeah, initially, he will accumulate sins. Okay. But later, it is favorable for him. He should be actually giving it up. Okay. So now, Bhakti Yogi. Okay. Now we are going to discuss something which is relevant to us. Okay. So, what is the practice of a Bhakti Yogi? I thought all of you would raise your hands and answer. Interestingly, no one is answering.
The 9 processes of devotional service?
Yeah, correct. So, 9 limbs. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vetanam. What about Varnashrama?
Initially, he has to perform Varnashrama.
Initially means till when, Prabhu?
Till there is anartha nivritti, purification of the heart.
Acha? No. Actually, right from the stage of Adho Shraddha, he is not expected to perform Varnashram duties. Because his purification of heart is not due to his practice of Varnashram, his purification of heart is directly due to his practice of Bhakti. That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Cheto Darpanam Arjanam Bhavamaha Davagni Nirvapanam. So the very first benefit of practicing Bhakti or chanting the holy name is purification of heart. And also in Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami says, the first benefit of practicing Bhakti is Kleshagni. Kleshagni means destruction of Kleshas. And the first aspect of Klesha is actually Avidya. Avidya means ignorance or sinful vasanas. And the second is Bijam. Bijam means sinful desires. So all of this is destroyed by practice of Bhakti, the limbs of Bhakti. So for a devotee, even though the prime purpose of performing Varnashram duty is to purify the heart, but because a devotee's purification of heart comes by practice of devotional service, Varnashram for purification of heart becomes redundant. It's actually, in one sense, a redundant thing. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that for a sadhaka, Varnashram is not, to perform Varnashram duties is not mandatory. It is not a part of his sadhana. So now, Shyamalal Prabhu said, let us assume that Shyamalal Prabhu's answer is right. Let's say for theoretical sake, let us assume that Shyamalal Prabhu's answer is right. Okay. Prabhu, you didn't hear anything that I spoke in the last 5 minutes. So you just stick to your answer and then answer the subsequent answer the subsequent questions that I'm going to ask you. So Shyamalal Prabhu will answer the rest of the things. Prabhu, what is the goal of a Bhakti Yogi?
Goal is pure love of Godhead.
Okay. Pure love. Okay. So, what does he gain by performing Varnashram duty? You stick to whatever was your original conception.
Purification of the heart. Anartha nivritti.
Okay. So, you say anartha nivritti. And what does he lose by neglecting to perform his Varnashram duty?
Actually, he does not lose anything by not performing Varnashram.
Why not? If by practicing Varnashram, if his purification of heart is going to happen, then if he neglects to perform Varnashram duty, how will his heart become purified?
Because his purification is taking place through chanting Hare Krishna.
Then why should he perform Varnashram duty?
Okay. Yeah, correct. Caught in my own web.
So the point is that so what does he gain by performing Varnashram duties? Actually, he can set the example for others.
Can we call this loka sangraha?
He can actually set. Yeah, this is called, this is what Krishna calls it, loka sangraha mevapi sampashyan kartum arhasi. He says for loka sangraha, other people may not have qualification for bhakti. In order to set the right example for others, one may do it. Okay. And by neglecting to perform varnashram, you may not set the example for others. Okay. So now, Shyamalal Prabhu said that in the, till Anarthanavritti one should perform. Of course, now he has probably retracted his answer. But still, my question is, if this is the case, this is something very, very serious. So now, Shyamalal Prabhu, what is your Varna?
I'm probably Vaishya because I'm earning whatever work I'm doing.
You're probably a Vaishya. So you have any time tried to actually find out what your Varna is?
No.
So according to the rules of Varnashram, if you are performing an occupation which is not according to your Varna, what happens?
Then you're incurring sin.
You're incurring sin. So if someone does a Varna check on you, and if they find out that your Varna is a Brahmana, okay, and your occupation can be Patan, Patan, Yajan, Yajan, Dana, Pratigraha. Okay. You can study the Vedic literatures, teach them. You can perform yajnas, you can teach others or engage others in performing yajnas, and you can give knowledge in charity and accept some food by begging. So if they do a Varna check on you and conclude that this is what is your Varna, so are you willing to accept your new profession?
Not possible.
Yeah, so the point is that most of us say Varnashram is, many people we think Varnashram is needed, but interestingly not anyone thinks what is my Varna, how is it that I have never tried to find out what my Varna is, because Bhagavad Gita says Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna Paradharmo Swanushtitat Swadharmehi Nidanam Shreyaha Paradharma Paradharmo Bayavahaha. He says that Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna, it is better to perform your own Swadharma improperly than to perform someone else's Dharma perfectly. Swadharmehi Nidanam Shreyah, it is better to die trying to perform your Dharma than to perform someone else's Dharma with some apparent prosperity. So you are actually now quite prosperous, probably, I'm sure, right? Reasonably prosperous. But what if you find out that it is not an occupation according to your dharma? Bhagavad Gita says it is better to die practicing a dharma which is yours than to prosper, apparently prosper practicing someone else's dharma, because you are seeing that you are prospering, but in reality, day in and day out, you are incurring more and more sins. So this is a very dangerous thing, actually, in one sense. But fortunately for us, Shyamondo, I see that you are raising, but just hold on for 1 second. Fortunately for us, it is not a part of our sadhana. You know, the practicing varnashram duties is not a part of our sadhana. So therefore, in one sense, like we are relieved. You don't really have to know what your Varna is and you know exactly perform it like that. Yes, Shyam Mohan Prabhu.
But Prabhuji, is our Varnashram not determined by our gunas and karmas?
Yes, it is.
So then why this imposition that somebody, like the example that you just mentioned, that if the Varna is supposed to be Brahmana.
But supposed to be means? No. See, one thing. I will have to clarify two things here. See, the primary thing is your guna. So who is going to evaluate your guna and find out what your Varna is? Even though you may have chosen a karma, but what if you have chosen a karma which is inappropriate to your guna? Okay. So then naturally, if you say, see, forget about guna, I have chosen a profession, na, so that is my Varna. You cannot say like that. And the second thing is, many times we say that Prabhupada says that Varna is not according to one's birth, he says. But actually, in one sense, it is not that Varna is not according to birth. But Varna, birth very much indicates one's Varna. Because if you say one's Varna has nothing to do with birth, then you are actually rejecting law of karma. Because according to law of karma, a particular child takes birth to a particular father and a particular mother because of his particular karma only. It is not by chance. No birth takes place by chance. You know, a particular soul takes shelter in a particular family according to the karma that he has done. So if the father is Brahminical and the mother is Brahminical by guna, then it is very natural that a soul which has accumulated that, which has that kind of Brahminical swabhava, will actually take shelter of that particular household. But having said that, when we say that Varnashrama is not according to birth, we say it is not just according to birth. But birth itself is decided based on guna only. Birth is not random. So therefore, in today's day and age, because people may not perform these particular samskaras and they may not be very careful about whom they should associate with and all that, for that reason actually people, even though they may be born according to a particular nature, their nature changes according to the whom they associate with. Like you see in the case of Ajamil, he was born Brahmana, but then eventually by association he became a Shudra actually. So it's not that birth does not have. So in fact, if you see in the 7th canto, in the 11th canto, in the 3rd canto, in all those places, he says dharma according to birth. Okay, the verse itself says dharma according to birth, and Prabhupada translates it as Varnashrama dharma. Even though Prabhupada says one's Varna is not according to birth, but when the Bhagavatam itself talks about dharma according to birth, he calls it as Varnashrama dharma. So we have to understand that when we say that one's Varna is not determined by birth, we should understand what it means is birth in itself is not a sufficient condition to determine one's Varna. But birth is a very, very significant criteria, because that birth indicates what kind of karma you have done in your previous life. Is that relevant, Shyam Mohan Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhuji, yes, very much.
Yeah. So therefore, these things we have to be very careful. Otherwise, this is what Bhagavad Gita says, this is what Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, this is what Bhagavatam says. For Bhakti Yogis, there is no need for performing Varnashram Dharma except that if they are obligated to set the right example for others who may not have faith in pure devotional service, that could be one of the reasons. That could be the only reason why they can perform varnashram duties. But otherwise, if none of anyone around them know what their varna is, and if they themselves don't know what their varna is, then what kind of dharma they are going to practice in the name of varnashram dharma? So what dharma he will practice when he does not even know what his varna is? And not only that, it is the dharma shastras which will say what is your dharma according to your varna and ashrama. So now my question to you, Shyamalal Prabhu, is what kind of dharma shastras have you read? Any dharma shastras?
I've read a little of Mahabharat.
Okay, you have read a little of Mahabharat, but of course that will again be relevant only when you know your varna, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So the injunctions given there will be relevant only if you know your varna, and then you can identify, oh, this is my varna, accordingly these are my duties, right? So most of us have not read any dharma shastras also. And dharma shastras are not meant for devotees also. Bhakti shastras are meant for devotees, right? So therefore, this is what this whole chart, if you see. So the second thing, okay, but before we move ahead, any further questions on this topic based on this chart and connected to what we have been discussing in the last? Yes, Prabhu, Shyam Mohan Prabhu, go ahead.
Prabhuji, this comparisons that you have given is very nice, exhaustive. But it also raises few questions in my mind.
Yes.
That we as Bhakti Yogis are supposed to follow our Bhakti Shastras and the process of Bhakti that is understood.
Mm-hmm.
And the purification for us need not necessarily come from Varnashram.
Correct.
I'm talking about this second category of Nishkam Karma Yogi.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what I understand, correct me Prabhuji if I'm wrong, the mm-hmm. purpose of Nishkam Karma Yogi is finally purification, that is his goal in the intermediate term, and then finally mm-hmm. liberation.
Mm-hmm.
But then the methodology by which he achieves that is by purification, comes basically from purification of one's ego, finally, because that aham, that ahankar has to go away slowly, slowly over a period of time by his practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how his purification will come about.
Well, that is one aspect of purification. Purification of false ego is one aspect, but there are other aspects of purification also.
Achha. Let us see, assume that this is the important aspect on which one is focusing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, vis-a-vis a bhakti yogi, a bhakti yogi also desires purification of false ego
mm-hmm.
in service through means of bhakti, through his practice of bhakti.
Correct.
But what I have observed in my own self, that I have been practicing over a long period of time, sufficiently long, so to say, but still that
how purification,
since 1998, Prabhuji, I got introduced to the consciousness.
Okay, 1998. Okay, that's like 23 years. Okay.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. since I see that purification of false ego has not come about to any significant extent.
Okay.
But if I were to focus on Nishkam Karma Yoga, mm-hmm. I think the focus there is more on purification of false ego, Nishkam Karma, because that that tendency to own up everything and then enjoy for one's own sense gratification, satisfaction,
mm-hmm.
that focus is there in Nishkam Karma, where you want to do away with this sense of false ego. But in Bhakti, what has happened is that because I have not taken up the training very properly,
mm-hmm.
so that is why my this false ego has not been purified to that extent, the way ideally a very good bhakti yogi practitioner should have achieved over at least these 20-23 years.
Okay, so we have to evaluate it, Prabhu. Let us evaluate what constitutes false ego. Okay, I am going to, because you asked the question, I am going to conduct a small interview. So let us try to evaluate this. So if you don't mind. So
I also wanted to base my question on this shloka from Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. It's 2.7.42. Yesham Bhagavan Daya Yedananta Sarvatmanashita Pado Yadi Nirvelikam. Te dustaram ati taranti cha deva mayam naisham mamaham itidhi
shvashrgala bakshe. Yeah.
So this naisham mamaham itidhi and this ati taranti cha deva mayam. So this is what I wanted to focus on.
Correct.
Since this mamaham doesn't go, aham and mama, one cannot ati taranti deva mayam, one cannot overcome this.
Okay. Yeah. I accept your point. So now I am going to, we are going to discuss this one thing. How does this, how do we transcend the false ego? Is it gradual or is it very drastic? That's what we are going to see now. So for that, I'm going to ask Shyam Mohan Prabhu only, because he was the one who asked the question. So Bhagavatam talks about, I will add one more slide here, and then we will, I will just write it. So there are four aspects of false ego according to Bhagavatam verse. Okay. Of course, this is one way of looking at it. There are other ways of looking at it, but Bhagavatam talks about this. Okay. So we are going to discuss about the four aspects of false ego. Okay. Now we will see. Okay, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay, and okay, what are the aspects? And this is for a materialist, and this is for a spiritualist. Okay, so now. Anyone knows which verse I am going to quote? This is a very famous verse, often quoted by Srila Prabhupada, which talks about these four aspects of false ego. Anyone knows?
From which canto, Prabhuji?
This is from the 10th canto.
Brahmaji's prayers?
No. Okay, I will tell. Okay. Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridatuke swadik kalatradishu bauma ijjadi yas tirtha buddhis salilena karihichit janeshu abhigneshu sayeva gokara. You know this verse, right?
Yeah.
So first thing he says is atma buddhi. So atma buddhi. Atma buddhi means who am I? Okay. Second, swabuddhi. Swabuddhi means what belongs to me. Okay. The third is swadikkalatradishu bhauma ijja buddhi. Ijja buddhi means what is worshipable. The fourth is Tirtha Buddhi. Okay. Tirtha Buddhi means what is a place of pilgrimage. Okay. So now, for a materialist, he says, yasyatma buddhi kunape tridatuke. Kunapa means a bag. Tridhatu is kafavata pitta. So yes, yatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke means for a materialistic person, who am I? I am this bag which consists of the three dhatus, which is I am the body. Okay. And what is swabuddhi? What belongs to me? Kalatra adishu. Kalatra adishu means my wife, house, etc., etc. This is what belongs to me. Okay. Ijya buddhi means what is worshipable. Bhauma, my place of birth is worshipable. Right. Tirtha buddhi. What is tirtha? What is a place of worship? He says, salile. A water body where I can bathe and wash away my sins. This is a materialist aspects of four aspects of false ego. Atma buddhi, I am body. Swabuddhi, wife, house, bank balance, etc. That is what belongs to me. Okay. That which I proudly say belongs, it's mine. Okay. Ijya buddhi, place of birth. Tirtha buddhi, a water body where I can bathe and wash away my sins. These are the four aspects of ego for a materialist. So he says, na karhichid abhigyeshu janeshu. But never he has these four identifications with abhigyeshu jana. Abhigyeshu jana means actually those who are devotees. Those who are knowledgeable about Krishna. Na karhichit. But he does not have these four aspects of false ego with respect to people who are knowledgeable about Krishna, which is devotees. So therefore, for a devotee, what is Atma Buddhi? Who am I? I am Vaishnava Das. I am the servant of Vaishnava. Then Swabuddhi, who belongs to me? Right? Dhanamora Nityananda, Patimora Gaurachandra, Pranamora Yugala Kishore. Right? So his Swabuddhi, what belongs to me? He thinks Vaishnavas are my only worthy belongings. Right? Third, Ijya buddhi. What is worshipable? For a materialist, it's the place of birth. But for a Vaishnava, for a spiritual, I should not say spiritualist, actually a Vaishnava. For a Vaishnava, it is Vaishnava Sangha. Vaishnava Sangha is worshipable. And what is a place of pilgrimage? Where Vaishnavas congregate to glorify Krishna. Where Vaishnavas congregate to do Shravanam and Kirtanam, that is a place of pilgrimage. Okay. So this is how that verse describes these four aspects of ego for a materialist and a spiritualist. Now my question to you, Shyam Mohan Prabhu, is that who would you, based on these identifications that I have presented, who would you identify with prominently? I mean, it may not be a very 100% Vaishnava and 0% materialist, but I'm asking you, with this definition of ego, which kind of ego do you think you possess?
Intellectually, Prabhuji, the Vaishnava ego is what I would like to identify myself.
Intellectually, Vaishnava ego. Okay. And then you can complete your sentence.
But my practice is not very much inconsistent with my belief.
Okay. Your practice is not consistent with your belief. So now my question to you is 23 years of practice. Now my question to you is, do you, even in the early years, probably your intellectually, your spiritual ego would have manifested, right? Intellectually at least.
Yes.
But on a practical basis, in your 23 years, do you see that you have made at least some inroads from here to here, from here to here, from here to here, and from here to here?
Yes, Prabhuji, yes.
So isn't that purification of false ego?
Yes.
So one of the aspects of understanding the path of bhakti is to understand when to expect what. So I will give you an example. Okay. I will give you an example. I will add one more slide here. Okay. So here in a book called Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur talks about anartha nivritti. So this includes purification of false ego also. Okay. So here he says there are four kinds of anarthas or unwanted desires. Okay. So there is sukrutottanarthas, or anarthas which are born due to a past pious life. And then there are dushkrutottanarthas. Okay. And then there are anarthas due to past sinful life. Then there are bhaktiyottanarthas. Bhaktiyottanarthas means by proper practice of bhakti, you actually progress nicely. And because you progress nicely, people start glorifying you. And when people start glorifying you, it gets to your head. Name, fame, glorification catch you. So that is called as bhaktiyottanarthas. And the fourth are aparadottanarthas. So aparadottanarthas means unfavorable desires which are born due to committing offenses, especially the, the 10 offenses.
Yes. Puja, labh and pratishtha will go in the third category, Prabhuji.
Third category. Puja, labh, pratishtha will go in the third category. So he says, actually, each one of these has five stages of destruction. He says, ekadesha vartini. Okay. Then there is bahudesha vartini. Then there is praiki. Then there is purna. Then there is atyantiki. Okay, it is a gradual process. So sukrutottanarthas, dushkrutottanarthas and bhaktiottanarthas, these three types of anartha. Ekadesha vartini means only one anartha is gone. Bahudesha vartini means more anarthas start getting destroyed. Praiki means almost all the anarthas are gone. Purna means complete. Atyantiki means so much complete that That one does not one does not get it again. Okay. So sukrutottanartas, they are purna. They achieve purnata at the stage of ekadesha vartini, bahudesha vartini, praiki. It all happens at the stage of bhajanakriya. Okay. And then purnata is achieved at the stage of attained at the stage of ruchi. Sorry. Purnata at the stage of nishta and atyantiki at the stage of ruchi. Okay. And dushkrutottanartha also same thing. Ekadesha vartini, bahudesha vartini, praiki at the stage of bhajanakriya. Purna at the stage of nishta and atyantika at the stage of ruchi. And bhaktiottanarthas also, this happens at the stage of bhajanakriya. Completion at the stage of nishta and atyantika at the stage of asakti. Okay. Whereas this aparadottanarthas are most difficult to go. They leave atyantiki destruction only at the stage of when we become an associate of Krishna. And purnata happens at the stage of prema. And praiki almost gone at the stage of bhava. Okay. And ekadesha vartani and bahudesha vartani, they start with the bhajanakriya. And go on till asakti. So they are very slow to go away. So once cleansing of heart and purification of false ego, both go hand in hand, and this is the thing. So we should know when to expect what actually. That's a very important thing. In order to be enthusiastic and patient, so when can you be patient? When you know, when you sit in a train from Mumbai to Mathura and you know that in 23 hours or whatever, or if you're going by Rajdhani, it may come much more early, maybe 13 hours, 14 hours. So when you know that Mathura is going to come in 14 hours, then you will not become impatient after half an hour. Once Gargamuni Prabhu approached Srila Prabhupada. This was in 1966. So at that time Prabhupada was called as Swamiji only. So he approached Prabhupada and he said, "Swamiji, actually I have been chanting Hare Krishna for the last 2 months. Still I have not got love of God it." Like that he said. And Prabhupada started laughing and he said, "Keep chanting, it will come." Like that. So the point is, in order to be patient and enthusiastic and determined in our practice, it's very important to know where we are and when to expect what. What are the milestones we can expect at this stage of our devotional practice and what we should do to actually go to the next stage. So, ultimately, the complete transformation of false ego happens at the stage of bhava only. Complete transformation. Vidyate hridaya grantis chidyante sarva samshaya shiyante chasya karmani drishta evatmanishvare. When one sees Krishna at the stage of bhava, the complete internal, not just intellectual, complete internal transformation of false ego happens at that time. And it's a very gradual process. Gradual in the sense, it is much more faster compared to Nishkama Karma Yoga. And in fact, in Nishkama Karma Yoga, the transformation of false ego is very much incomplete. It is not at all complete. It's a very half-baked transformation of false ego. Is that relevant, Shamon Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhuji. Makes sense.
Yeah. So, anything else you wanted to...
Prabhuji, you said the purification of false ego is not complete in Nishkam Karma Yoga. So, that is accepted.
Yeah.
Because Nishkam Karma Yoga will not bring one to this conclusion that I am a Vaishnava Das. So,
correct.
That is accepted completely. But then, Prabhuji, the focus there is there on false ego, all the while, even from the beginning.
In what bhakti, makes you feel so, bro?
Nishkam Karma Yoga, though, it starts with that only, no?
Where?
That
how?
You are not the doer, you are not the enjoyer. And
he start with that?
That stage comes a little, that teaching, that stage also comes a little late, I think. I'll give
in
you another
bhakti,
example.
Does it come late? Isn't that the first thing that we learn in bhakti also?
I'll give you another example.
Gopi Bartha Kamalayor Dasa Dasanu Das.
I heard that very late in my Krishna conscious journey. And
I'll
give you another example, Prabhuji. That will make more that will present my case better. For example, Brahma Kumaris, you know about, and they are
about
we
them.
Know whatever they are and whatever they stand for, but at least in their movement, in their movement, in their preaching, they focus on this Atma, Atma, Atma all the time, all the time. Like the first encounter, I have my close relative who is a practitioner. That's how I know, because very early, many years back, she had taken me once to a seminar. And she herself is a preacher. So from that I know that from the very first thing they tell about Atma, 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 and all the time they talk about that only. For example, they will say that in that congregation, in that program, in that function, 1,000 Atmas had come or 100 Atmas had come. So then they say they will never leave you without this conception, will never go that you are an Atma, because that bombardment is there. So that focus is there. So similarly, I believe that maybe in this Nishkam Karma Yoga, that focus is there on false ego all the time. And how to bring it down. But what happens...
Let me ask you one thing, Prabhuji. First thing is, what they are practicing in Nishkama Karma Yoga or not, we do not know.
Completely rubbish. Completely rubbish. You cannot categorize into any of the Shastric categories.
Based on the same thing that you have presented, I am going to ask you one very critical question.
Yeah.
Okay. So, once you came to Krishna consciousness, how long did it take for you to actually start addressing another devotee as Prabhu?
That was on day one.
That was on day one, right? What does it mean?
But that sinking in takes time, Prabhuji. Of course, we can adopt the external expressions, but that sinking in.
Do you think in those practitioners, it has sunk in very clearly?
I don't know.
See, Prabhu, it is always one thing I'm telling you. The grass looks always very green on the other side. And because you brought out the question of Brahma Kumaris, recently, a few Brahma Kumaris had come to GV. I did not meet them, but one of the other Brahmacharis was taking them around. And they were really, how do you chant? What do you chant? Oh, you're chanting with beads. They had apparently never chanted with beads or whatever, I don't know. But they said, oh, this is a very nice way of chanting and keeping count and things like that. No one, until you become an insider, the real struggles, they will never tell you. So, ultimately, everyone wants to present a very Very wonderful, you know, presentation of their organization only. So what exactly they go through internally, we do not know. So we are only looking at it as an outsider, and it looks really good, you know, there. So, but the point is, how many acharyas in our lineage have actually practiced it and perfected their life? You can see even the Vartaman acharyas, you know. So, so therefore, and even now we all have choice, right? Free will is always there. No one is catching hold of her and catching hold of us and binding us. If anyone thinks that a better transformation of false ego happens in some other path, the door is always open, actually, in one sense. But in reality, the actual transformation of actual and complete transformation of false ego happens only by the practice of bhakti. See, if someone is incompletely or inappropriately practicing bhakti, it will take a long time. So we all have to actually then ask ourselves, if we are, because you did say that, you know, I am not properly practicing bhakti, then what makes us feel that if we take up to some other path, we will practice it properly also?
Yeah, correct question.
Isn't it? So if you are practicing bhakti improperly, then if you also know that bhakti is ultimate path, bhakti, you know, completely transforms the false ego, whereas the other paths only incompletely transform the false ego and all that. And if we are also identifying that my transformation of false ego is happening very slowly because I'm improperly practicing bhakti, then what makes us feel that if I choose another path, I will practice it properly?
I just wanted to know, this Nishkam Karma Yoga is just like we have with the rasas. The lower rasas are included in the higher rasas. Like servitude is included in friendship, and friendship is included in parent. Like that.
Correct.
So similarly, this Nishkam Karma Yoga is included in bhakti. Is it some description?
No. So good you brought out this point. Next week when we start, we will try to understand this concept of yoga ladder, what it is. Because it will give us some idea about, you know, is Nishkama Karma Yoga a prerequisite for bhakti? Because yoga ladder mein to wohi sunte hain, pehle sakama karma yoga aata hai, phir nishkama karma yoga aata hai, phir jnana yoga aata hai, phir ashtanga yoga aata hai, phir bhakti yoga aata hai. So is it like a prerequisite, or is it included in bhakti yoga? We will try to understand this in our next session. Is that okay, Prabhu?
Fine, Prabhuji. My just to present my case a little more clearly, my complaint is that while I have been practicing, this is my complaint with myself only, but then maybe this will bring out some systemic defects also, if I can say that, in the process.
If it is, we will explore whether there is a systemic defect or not.
Yeah, I'll just say one sentence, Prabhuji. This Dehatma Buddhi, no, it doesn't go. We know we are Vaishnavas. We want to become Vaishnavas Das, like you said, in this Atma Buddhi. But then still that conception of body, and then conception of senses, and then when there is body and senses, then there is some sense gratification, which is also allowed to some extent in Grihastha Ashram. So that conception, that doesn't go. That has not gone, at least in my case, I can say. So if I were to focus solely on, let's say, Nishkam Karma, and then solely focusing on this Mamaham, that Mamaham wala na, Naisha Mamaham iti Buddhi iti. Whether I were to focus on that, maybe for some period of time, and then with some purification in my kitty, then I can focus more on the bhakti aspect. And then how to really, with that purified heart a little bit, then dovetail it to Krishna, towards Vaishnavas, towards their service, with more purification in my kitty, then possibly I would have done a little better by now. So that was my feeling.
Let's explore it, Prabhu. I understood your question, but we will next discussion we will take it up from there.
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you.
Because it's already 9:36, so we will pause here, and we will take next discussion starting with this question. Okay, so thank you all very much for your patient listening and participation, and we will continue this discussion next Friday. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Wonderful.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Very good learning experience.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Hari Bol.